Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and this is a show where we talk about subjects which are critical to our happiness and spiritual evolution. Please note that all the chat room questions will be answered in the chat room on next week's show, as well as posted on my website, which is davidgagan.com, hopefully within a day or so of the show. When you visit the site, you can ask additional questions even about other shows. You can listen to any previous show on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com by searching for either David Gagan or Common Sense Spirituality. I've launched a new podcast titled Aspects of Spirituality, which is also on iHeartRadio. There, I explain my worldview and what I have learned about the mysteries of life in short weekly podcasts. I hope you'll join me there. If you consider yourself to be an eternal being having a life experience, did you ever wonder who you really are when you're not incarnated on Earth? What is the nature of your soul? What stage of development is it in? Why did you choose to incarnate at this time and in this place? What are you trying to accomplish in this life? Our guest today believes that some of this information is available to us, and he has a process to get it. Our show today is titled The Michael System, and our guest is Shepherd Hoodwin. Shepherd is a channel who specializes in Michael teachings, which describes aspects of our soul or essence. He has been channeling Michael since 1986. He also does intuitive readings, past life regressions, healing, counseling, and teaching others to channel. He has conducted workshops on the Michael teachings throughout the United States and is the author of several books on the Michael teachings and spirituality, to include Journey of Your Soul, which I read and thoroughly enjoyed. Shepherd Hoodwin, welcome to the show, Shepherd.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Now, let's start out nice and simple. What is the Michael system?
Michael is a channeled entity that has brought forth a coherent body of knowledge that explains how we as eternal souls set up this particular lifetime and this series of lifetimes on Earth as human beings. And they delineate various categories. For example, there are seven types of souls. Often, I think, when we think of the soul, it's quite a vague thing. We think of the soul as a drop of water in an ocean, one drop the same as every other. But in fact, we have a completely unique blueprint as a soul. And so you can get your Michael chart channel that has about 20 pieces of information that gives a lot of the pieces of your particular blueprint.
Okay, now, who is Michael?
Michael is a group of 1,050 souls who completed their series of lifetimes on the physical plane, just as we're doing now, and then completed the next cycle of existence called the astral plane, and work as a reuniting body on the causal plane. And their role for us is as a teacher.
Okay, now when you channel Michael, if you will, this group, do you always channel the same soul, the same entity?
No, I think it varies depending on the need of the person. So even though they are as a group reuniting, they're not also just a blob. So they still have their individuality even while they work together in a very sophisticated group way. And so if I'm working with someone who needs a particular specialty, then that will be drawn in. But for the most part, I can't tell the difference. It feels the same to me.
And so this group entity is the one that chooses who talks to you, who communicates with you.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, Now, you're able to go into this entity and ask about anybody, and you did it about me, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But how does this entity know exactly all this information about whatever person you choose to ask them about? Where do they get this information?
What I need on my end is a clear identification of what soul we're talking about. And so when I channel a Michael chart on someone, I ask for the full name, any birth information that can be given, and a clear photograph showing the eyes. When I bring Michael in, they tune in and they determine exactly who that soul is, and then they dictate this information from the Akashic Records. The Akashic Records is the storehouse of knowledge of the universe.
So they would actually go in and look at the Akashic Records, and that's where the information comes from.
Yes.
Okay. Now, before we get into the any more detail on the Michael readings, I'd like to talk a little bit about cycles. And you mentioned that because I think it kind of sets up the frame of this thing. What is a cycle or a great cycle? What is that?
Each of us ultimately is an eternal spark of the Tao. The Tao is the source, the ground of all being, and all that is. And each of us is a unit of consciousness in that infinity. And as this eternal spark of the Tao, we each decided that we wanted to experience more of who we are by coming to this particular planet Earth and inhabiting a series of lifetimes in this particular life form, the human life form, as a means of growth, of exploration, of creativity. And so when we decided to do that, first, we checked out the planet to make sure that it was something that we really wanted to commit to. And then we gathered into soul families and chose basically everything on the Michael chart as a way of experiencing this particular planet in the way that we wanted to experience it. And so here we are on the physical plane having our lifetimes. And when we're done, we're going to all start to work together more in our soul families on the next plane of existence, which is the astral. And then it keeps moving through higher and higher planes of existence until we're reunited with the Tao or the all that is. And so that whole loop from the Tao down through the physical plane and up through all the higher planes and back again is called a grand cycle. The average person on Earth has had four previous grand cycles, meaning that they've done other planets. And I think that often science fiction writers are remembering their previous grand cycles when they write about other planets, that it's a deep buried memory in all of us. Those in the United States have had a little higher number of previous grand cycles. Every time you do a grand cycle, you gain layers, you gain capacity for complexity, subtlety, nuance, and so forth. The highest number of previous grand cycles that we know of for planet Earth is 19, but there might be other planets in the universe with a far higher average of grand cycles and some with less.
So how long does a grand cycle take?
Well, that's a tricky question to answer, because when you ask how long, you're thinking of years. And what are years? Years are a cycle of a planet around a star that is only relevant to this particular planet and this particular star. And so when you start looking at it from other points of view, what it would be like somewhere else, it starts to lose all of its meaning. So how long it takes brings up the whole issue of the nature of time. Now, some souls do a quick cycle, so there are souls on Earth that will complete all their lifetimes on the physical plane in as few as 37 lifetimes. And then there are others that have literally 1,000 or 2,000 They may be very short lifetimes. So, for example, I learned about a soul who specialized in infant mortality. This soul would come into babies that weren't going to live, but just to give a little bit of experience of that lifetime to offer service to the parents, perhaps, and then they would be done. So it really is a matter of individual choice. Choice is a big theme in the Michael teachings. Michael is always showing us that choice is our power. So also, you could compress those lifetimes that you're going to have on the physical plane into as little as a few thousand years. You could just, die, come right back, just keep doing it. Or you could take lengthy breaks, you could have more lifetimes, and you could spread it out over tens of thousands of years. So it's really up to you. It's the way that you want to experience this. You could view the university of life on the physical plane as a self-directed curriculum. You can do whatever you want as long as you can get others to agree to what you want.
So if you said, all right, I don't feel like reincarnating on Earth next time around. I want to do it on some other planet. You could do that. You would need other people, other souls to do that, to agree to do that with you, to live that life, I guess. But you could do that.
You could, but that would be problematic. Now, when you have your first lifetime on a planet, you have to have it easy for a while. You're like a newborn infant soul. And you don't know anything about that planet. You don't know how anything works. And so you're just going to basically be learning how to survive in those first few lifetimes, getting used to the lay of the land. You have to learn how to operate that particular equipment, whatever sort of body that you're incarnating into. So if you go planet hopping and jump into a life, you could be way, way over your head. So you're probably not going to want to do that. What is more likely to happen if you're on a lengthy vacation from incarnating on Earth is that you will hang out on the astral plane of other planets, where you can look in, where you can commune with other souls there as souls, and just learn about it, enjoy it, without the danger of, for example, creating karma. Karma is an energetic debt that you have to pay back to those that you generated the karma with. And so let's say you go and have one lifetime on another planet and you screw up and you create a karmic debt. Well, then you're committed to going back there to finish up, or you will feel that you have unfinished business there.
Do you have the karma with that individual, or do you have karma and somehow you have to deal with that karma?
Generally, the debt has to be repaid to the one that you generated it with. Because that's, for example, if I borrow $10 from you and I pay it back to someone else, that doesn't really resolve things.
So when we do this cycle, let's go back to the cycle. When we do this cycle, we start from the Tao, we work our way all the way around, takes a long time because Earth is just probably a very small piece of that, our life in the physical world. And we go back and we learn this amazing amount of information. Do we retain that information in the next cycle, in the next cycle, in the next cycle?
We retain the lessons. We retain the skills. The specific pieces of information, probably not. But it's the lessons that the universe is concerned about. It's basically, we start out at the beginning of our very first cycle as sort of a lump of clay. And all of these experiences are about refining our consciousness. It's about raising consciousness to become conscious of more things at the same time, to become more refined in our ability to express unconditional love, truth, and beauty. So that's what we retain. And so you find people with higher numbers of previous grand cycles do have more complexity. They have, you might say, more moving parts to them, like this year's computer being more sophisticated than last year's computer. So there's more capability there to love in deeper and more extensive ways.
Okay, so we continue to grow, and our soul, even though when we incarnate on Earth, we go under a veil of forgetfulness, but our soul doesn't. So our soul keeps getting wiser and wiser as it goes through this these cycles.
Yes.
Okay. Now let's get into these readings a little bit. You break the charts into two charts, essence and overleaves. Let's start out with essence. what is our essence?
Essence is our soul.
Okay.
So the charts divided into soul and personality. Your personality is customized for each lifetime. So the various traits that you choose would show up on the Michael chart that you have as overleaves are specific to this lifetime, so they don't have to be the same as the last lifetime. But the top half of the chart, essence or soul, will stay the same in all of your Earth lifetimes.
Now when you say this stays the same, does it stay the same through the entire cycle, even when you're on higher planes, or is this just how it stays when you're incarnated in the physical plane?
This is the nature of your soul that you carry throughout the whole grand cycle.
Okay.
The importance of these things recede as you recombine with your soul families, but it's still there.
Okay. Now, you start out by saying that we have different roles. Talk to us a little bit about our roles.
There are seven roles or soul types, and this is really the centerpiece of the Michael teachings. If you know what your role is, right off, that explains so much about who you are, why you do the things you do, why you gravitate in certain directions and not in others. It's your basic model. It's sort of like saying that if you drive a vehicle, are you driving a truck, a sedan, a hatchback, etc. It's the basic nature of what is carrying you through your existence. The seven soul types are server and priest, which are inspirational in nature. When I say inspirational, I mean they are about the inner world. There are two expression axis roles that are about self-expression, creativity, communication. These are artisan and sage. There are two action axis roles that are about doing in the outer world, warrior and king.
I lost you a little bit on that. I just couldn't hear you.
Oh, warrior and king. Did you hear that?
Yes, I got that.
And then there is the neutral assimilation axis role scholar, which steps back from the other three and provides a resource of knowledge and observation for the others.
Okay, so this tells us about it. So pick one of these and tell us, you know, what it would mean to be it. We'll go. I was a priest. Go with priest. What does that mean? What would a priest be like?
Each of the seven roles is constructed differently. And they have anywhere from 1 to 5 psychic inputs. That means that some souls process one piece of information at a time, so they're much more focused and, in a way, simple. And then artisans process 5 pieces at a time, so they're the most complicated in that regard. And priests have 2 inputs. That means that you will always function in such a way where one of your foci is about the current reality, which we all have to do. We all have to have one input that is attuned to what's going on around us. But then you have another input that is always paying attention to your vision of the higher good. And your construction as a soul is that you're always trying to put those two things together. And so priests are the quintessential healers, spiritual teachers. You find them in a lot of helping professions. So you will always be looking to help people find their spiritual mission in life, you will want to be helping them to heal, to understand their inner world better, to do what they came on earth to do.
So these seven roles, we choose them.
Yeah.
So for every cycle. So we might have chosen a sage the last time, or an artisan, or maybe a priest again for me, right? Just don't know.
Well, you've had 10 previous grand cycles, and there are only seven roles. So it's quite likely that you're doing priest for the second time. It's not certain because, again, all is choice. You get to choose what you're going to do in the universe. But it is probable. Now, you have a twin soul who's a scholar, and the role of your twin soul is important because it gives you secondary traits. And so maybe the first time around you were a priest with a priest essence twin or twin soul, and that would have given you a more concentrated experience of being a priest. In this cycle, you are a priest with a scholar essence twin, so you have secondary scholar traits, and those two flavors blend together. And the fact that you were an engineer and you've done so much high-level learning and experimentation bespeaks your scholar lead-through.
Okay, so the essence twin isn't really another soul, another essence. It's an aspect of our essence.
No, it is another soul.
Oh, it is.
Right.
Okay. So this soul, is it common that we know this soul, this other soul in a life?
About 10% of your lifetimes you set it up to know and team up with your essence twin. It's a very involving, intense relationship, and so you're just not going to do it that often because there are a lot of other things that you as a soul would like to accomplish on the physical plane. So your essence twin is currently in a male body and you do not plan to meet. Now, this person is quite young. This person is about 10 or 11 years old right now. You're probably not going to meet this soul. The soul may be anywhere in the world. Now, until 2006, when your scholar essence twin incarnated as this male, then that soul was discarnate. So that soul was, in a way, living within you. You were pulling in a lot more scholar information. And once this soul incarnated, you had less of the scholar coming. But you had already had all those years of your career and your training and so forth where you took advantage of this energy. So did you notice that maybe you became a little less scholarly in 2006 and became more purely the priest?
I never thought about it. It could be. In all honesty, I never thought about it. I'd have to mull over that and see what was going on in my 2006. That wasn't part of the report.
No, well, you know, I was reviewing your chart the other night, and then I reviewed your biography, and I was starting to wonder if the scholar was discarnate earlier in your life that enabled you to do the sorts of things that you did. And so I just checked with Michael the other night.
Oh, that's very interesting. It could be. I did an awful lot of the research and such, and quite frankly, it was around 2006 that I determined that I needed to get out of the business world. It took me another 3 or 4 years to actually accomplish that fact, but it was right around then that I said, hey, I'm out. I want to go do something else. And, of course, this is what I ended up doing.
Well, as an old soul priest, what you're doing now is totally in essence or on mission for who you are as a soul. Everything on your chart aligns with what you are doing now. And what you were doing in your career before this was just fine because the soul seeks a wide range of experiences, and everything you experience is useful. But it wasn't as much aligned with who you are. However, you made good use, as I said before, of your scholar essence twin bleed through in order to be able to do all the studying and so forth that you did.
Yeah, interesting. You talk about a cadence.
Yes.
What's a cadence?
There's a series of numbers on your chart. It's a little bit complex, but it determines how you manifest your soul, the areas that you direct it into. And your primary casting, your cadence position, is number 5, and 5 is the sage position. Sage is the name of another one of the roles. I am a sage soul. And sages are all about communication. So you are a sage cast priest, and that means that not only do you seek inspiration and inspire others, but you direct your priest essence a lot into the sage domain, which is that of communication. And so here you are doing this great radio show, and that is the sage domain, radio, communication, broadcasting. And so you tend to bring your inspiration through humor, insight, wisdom, that sort of thing. Sages are more intellectual, and priests are more emotional. Priests are more about the feeling of being connected to the all that is. Sages are more about understanding that. And so you combine those two quite beautifully in what you're doing.
Now there are such things as cadres and greater cadres, and these, I guess, are just groups of souls that we travel with, I guess.
Yes, so we are one with everything, that's true, but we don't have the same closeness of relationship with all beings in the cosmos. There are some souls that we are extremely close to, some that we are moderately close to, and some that are farther away. And one of the things that determines this is where we are in our soul families. So on your Michael chart, it says that you're in Cadre 4, Entity 7, or we would just say 4-7 in this particular system. There are different ones. And that means that you are in the 7th entity or soul family in your group of 7. And that group of 7 is called Cadre 4. So you're in a group of about 1,000, and then that group is in a group of 7, so that's 7,000. And then that group is in a group of 12 of those, so that's about 100,000. It just keeps going on and on like that.
Okay.
So, your spiritual family will reunite when every one of its members are complete with the physical plane and start working together on the astral plane. And then as you move through the causal plane, you will recombine more and more and more. So you're going to be learning about working together as a group and less as individuals. The physical plane is dedicated to learning how to be the best individual that you can so that you have more to bring to that recombined grouping once you get onto the higher plane.
Okay. Now, I see that that I have a task companion. What is that? That's obviously different than my essence twin. What's a task companion?
A task companion is another soul like the essence twin that you team up with at the beginning of your grand cycle. Whereas your essence twin is an inward-directed relationship. This is a soul that when you're together, you get very involved with each other to have growth lessons internally. The task companion is the opposite of that. That's a soul that you like to get together with to expand your ability to work together in the outer world. So this is like the ideal, you might say, business partner or someone who you work together with really well in whatever you came on Earth to do. And your task companion, if you happen to know them, again, you're not going to do this in every lifetime. But if you do know your task companion in the flesh, you will find that your life task and his or her life task complements. And so let's say you work together and you are a landscape architect and your task companion is a contractor. That would be an example of how you could work together and your task could complement. Or it could be a spiritual complement. It could be that your tasks are complementary in the sense that they are there's two sides of one coin in terms of what you're trying to learn about in this lifetime.
Okay. Now, we have an energy that is both male and female, and we have both of those. Talk a little bit about those.
Every soul has a particular ratio of male to female energy. There are many things on your chart and off your chart as well. Of course, your astrology and other things, your imprinting would also come into this. But there are many things on the chart that would give an impression of masculinity or femininity. Your male-female energy ratio is specifically about how goal-oriented you are. The more male energy, the more goal-oriented you are. So even if you're a female in this lifetime, if you have high male energy, you are more likely to be a workaholic who will stay with one thing until completion. And people with higher female energy will tend to do a lot of tasks. So it's less goal-oriented, it's more atmospheric. The feminine is about creating an atmosphere. It's about gestation. It's about creativity. Male energy is about productivity. It's about accomplishment. So it's more linear. So the higher the male energy, the more linear you are. Your ratio is 41-59. So you're in the middle range, like really the majority of people. That means that you will be pretty much equally comfortable as a male as well as a female. And you've probably had a fairly equal number of male and female lifetimes. However, since at 41-59, your male energy is 20 points less than your female energy. Your female energy is almost half again as much. It is likely that you've had more female lifetimes. Now, priests tend to like both the male and the female body. They're not so fussy about that, whereas, say, warriors and kings and scholars tend to have a strong preference for the male body. Servers and artisans tend to have a preference for the female body. You will also be magnetically attracted to partners who have the opposite of your male-female energy ratio, and that's true whether you're straight or gay, it's true whether you're male or female. If you are married to someone whose ratio is 59-41, that's going to be one element of attraction on your chart that draws you together. It's not the only one, but it will definitely have an impact.
Okay, now you talk about frequency. What's that all about?
Your frequency is the speed of vibration of your soul on a scale of 1 to 100. And at 47, once again, you're right in the middle range as the majority of people are. Now, the role of priest is a high-frequency role, as is the role of artisan. So on the level of you that's accounted for by your role, you're high-frequency in that it's natural for you to be more connected with the spirit world than with the physical world. But then you also have an individual frequency, and that could be low, medium, or high. And so if you were a priest with also a high individual frequency, it would make you very airy. You would tend to live your lifetime faster, you might say. There are people with high frequency that just cram a lot of experience into a short period of time. They live intensely. People with low frequencies tend to live in a more slow, gradual, laid-back manner. Again, you're right in the middle. And you're going to be most comfortable up close with people whose frequency is within about 20 points of yours in either direction, which for you will be the majority of people.
Okay. Well, let's talk about personality. we have the essence was half of the chart, and the other half of the chart is the personality, which is, I guess, unique to this particular life.
Yes. So when you're planning a lifetime, and a lot of planning can go into an individual lifetime, you think about what you want to accomplish, and then you assemble the tools that are going to let you best accomplish that. And a part of the tool is your body type, and part of the tool are your specific personality traits that in the Michael teachings we call your overleaves. They're called overleaves because they lay on top of your soul. Now, perhaps you've seen those anatomy charts in school where they have the outline of the body, and then they have these overleaves, which are these clear plastic films that go over it, that maybe that one shows you the kidney and the next one shows you the nervous system, etc. So these lay on top of. Now, what's interesting about your overleaves is that they are mostly priest inspirational position overleaves. And so you have a personality that matches up with your priest essence. You have an extremely inspirational personality. Your three main overleaves, goal, attitude, and mode, are all in the priest position on the chart. And I think you're going to post a copy of the chart, or people can go to my website, shepherdhoodland.com, and see a sample chart so they could follow along with us if they're listening later on. So, growth is the
goal. Yeah, this is, no, let me just say for the listeners, this is all laid out in your book, Journey of Souls. So there's a great deal of explanation for anybody who wants to look into this more deeply. All of these specifics are greatly expanded in your book.
Yes, and if you go to my website, shepherdhoodland.com, there is a sample chart and a 10,000 word explanation of it that you can follow along with that will help you understand the system in a little more depth.
So you were saying that there's things like needs, and it says here, I need freedom, adventure, and security. So everybody comes with certain sets of needs that I guess makes them happy, if and that's what they try to strive for. Is that how this works?
Yes. So when you decide what your life task is going to be, there are certain things you need to accomplish that. And there are 9 needs, and your top 3 are freedom, adventure, and security. So the freedom need is pretty self-explanatory. You need to have a lot of leeway to do things the way that you want to do them. That's your number one thing. And so if you were ever in a job position where you had someone breathing over your shoulder all the time and micromanaging, that would not work for your life test.
And that is absolutely true of my life.
Yes. And then your second need is adventure, which is you need some excitement. So that could be risk-taking, but it could be spiritual adventure. It doesn't have to be material. But it could also mean that you love to travel. It could mean that you like to have exciting, unusual spiritual experiences, that sort of thing. But that is also very important for your life task. Now, your third task is a counterbalance to this, which is a security task. So although your freedom and adventure needs might have you taking risks, your security need means that you also need a stable life situation. You need financial security. You need to feel like your outer life is being handled comfortably before you can pursue your adventures with all the freedom that you would like to do. So it reigns in the first two a little bit.
Yeah, and I would have to say that seems to me right on for me. What's a life quadrant?
When we're in a group of people, we instinctively tend to play different roles in that group. A person in the love position tends to be in the initiator. So let's say you're with a group of friends, and the person in the love position says, hey, let's go to a movie. And that's the initiation. you being in the knowledge quadrant, you say, oh, hey, I read a review of this movie, and I think we'd all really enjoy this one. And the person in the power position might say, hey, everyone, let's get in the car, I'll drive. And then the support position person might say, hey, why don't you guys go get a seat, and I'll get popcorn for everyone. So you tend to do knowledge. You tend to provide information for the group. And
okay.
That highlights your both your scholar essence 23 and your sage casting, because they both feel big on knowledge and insight.
Now, how about goals? You know, there are goal type of people. What, talk about goals.
There are seven goals, just as there are seven roles and seven of the other overleaves. And the goal is probably the most important of the overleaves, although it's subtle. It's not going to jump out at you like the role will, but it will determine the shape of your lifetime. Growth is the most common of the seven goals. 40% of us are in growth at any given time. And if you have a goal of growth, that means that you like to keep busy. You are always seeking stimulation. You want what is new. So you're maybe going to explore a new cuisine, or learn a new language, or read a new book, or learn about a new teaching. There's always something new, and for that reason, you tend to keep busy. Positive means comprehension. It means you learn things. A negative pull is confusion, and that's where you get into overwhelm. When that happens, you can temporarily slide or move to the opposite goal, reevaluation, where you process your past experiences before taking on any new ones. Now, if you have a goal of growth, you will attract challenges that if you work really hard, you can overcome them. On the other hand, if you have a goal of acceptance, which is my goal, you tend to attract a lot of situations that you cannot change. And so your choice is to like it or lump it. You can learn to accept and make peace with what is, or you can fight it. And so people with a goal of growth have a very different looking life than those with a goal of acceptance. And then the goal of flow, which is the neutral one, those people have a life that says, if you let go and let God, if you just relax and trust the universe, things will work out. And that's how it tends to be if you have a goal of flow. But it's not how things tend to be for you if you have a goal of growth. And so the self-help gurus that try to tell you that, well, if you work really hard, you can overcome, that's not true for everyone. And the self-help gurus who tell you, well, if you let go and let God, everything will work out, that's not true for everyone. If you know what your goal is, you know what's going to work better for you.
How about attitude?
Attitude is how you look at the world, and you also are in the priest position attitude, which is called spiritualist. And spiritualists look at the world as a place of infinite possibility. It's an inspirational way of looking at life, and that's why it aligns with your priest essence. And so you tend to counsel other people in such a way that says, wow, you could do this, you could do that, the possibilities are endless. And you get excited about those possibilities. So you inspire others to see that they can do whatever they want to do. Positive pull is verification. This is a real important theme for all the priest overlays, including the role of priest, which is that because it's an emotional, internal kind of quality, it's very important that you verify things, that you check things out and make sure that they hold water before you give your heart and soul to them. So if you have this vision of, let's say you have a vision of starting a spiritual community, and you're very excited about it, you know it's possible, you know you can do it, but then you also need to do a little research and find out, okay, what is this going to cost? Are people really going to be interested in this? Will this be a success? You verify the vision to make sure that it's sound. The negative pole is blind faith. You just take it on faith. Everything on the Michael chart has a positive and a negative pole or side to it. And so the goal is always to understand the pitfalls of any trait that you have and endeavor to stay in the positive side of that energy. There is nothing on your Michael chart that is in and of itself good or bad. Everything can be used in a good, positive way if you're in the positive side of that energy. And so that's what we endeavor to do.
We are beginning to run out of time, and there were a few more that are left. Why don't you talk about, why don't we jump down to soul age and then soul age levels? I think that's kind of interesting.
Yes, it's probably the second most important and fascinating part of the Michael chart, your soul age. When you're brand new to a planet, you are a first level infant soul. And you may have one life at first level infant, you may have 10. It just depends on you, how long the lives are, what you set out to do on that level. And when you're done with first level infant, you go to second level, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and then you go back to first level baby soul. And the infant soul is just learning how to survive on the planet. The baby soul is learning the rules of civilization. A lot of fundamentalists of any stripe are baby souls. And then once the soul has learned how to exist within social groups, the soul moves into the young soul cycle, where the lessons are about, okay, how can I make the outer world work for me? Now, this can be a positive or negative experience, just like everything else on the chart. So we have a quintessential negative pole young soul in Donald Trump, who wants to shape the world in a selfish way. And then you have idealistic young souls like John Kennedy, who want to shape the world in the altruistic way. So again, no good or bad. But once you've handled the outer world through mastering the infant, baby, and young soul cycles, you turn a big corner where you start to go within in the mature soul cycle, which is sort of like the adolescence of the soul, where you're exploring emotions, relationships, and the inner world. And once you handle that, then you're in the old soul cycle, which is instead of going deep, you go high. You're looking for an overview. You're looking for perspective. You're looking for how does this all fit together. And you are a third-level old soul priest. And so you are at the level where your inspiration is trying to take in as much of the cosmos as possible. You're trying to see not just you and me, but how does it all fit together? That's your emphasis. Third level is where you work really hard to internalize the lessons of that cycle.
How many levels do you go through? Is it a couple of lifetimes for every level, or you know, through your seven levels, or does it vary a lot?
Some of the levels take a lot longer than the others. So, for example, first and seven may be relatively quick. Six can take many, many lifetimes, because this is where you tie up loose ends with other souls, including paying back karmas with others. So you might say do first level in one or two lifetimes, third level might take four, and your sixth level might take eight. But it's up to you, because you have the choice of how in-depth of an experience you want to have of any particular level or soul age or the entire physical plane.
Okay. We have run out of time. Very interesting. You will do these charts for anybody, I guess. Why don't you tell people how they can get in touch with you? Again, it's Shepherd Hoodwin, spelled like it sounds, Hoodwin. Why don't you quickly tell people how to get in touch with you?
Yes, just go to my website. First name is Shephard. And at the website, you can order a chart, you can contact me, and all of my books are also available there.
Shepherd, it was great to have you on. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's show and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. You can ask other questions directly by going to the contact section of my website, and I'll publish those answers as well. Also, I cover these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes at both the Common Sense Spirituality Show and Aspects of Spirituality on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.